This Week in Free Energy.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to Free Energy Now. This is your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us every day at freeenergynews.com. You can come online to see our call-in numbers at freeenergynow.net and see our upcoming speakers and past guests. Today we have a very special guest. Mike Brady is going to be joining us, or is actually with us now. Thanks for coming on, Mike.
It's a pleasure, Sterling.
You and I go way back, 5 years just about, and we've had a lot of interactions together. Mike Brady invented the magnet motor, which is probably the most famous worldwide of all magnet motors, except maybe like the Howard Johnson that's been around a little bit longer. There have probably been between tens of thousands to perhaps low millions of people who have seen your video of your magnet motor in operation. It is, of course, not skeptic-proof. The walk-around takes place during deceleration, not acceleration, but it still has gotten a lot of people really interested, spurred a lot of people in wondering if maybe magnets could be harnessed as an energy source. You have since upgraded your magnet motor, so it's now an electromagnetic version, accentuating what you were observing with the magnets. And you have, what you're saying on your website, a 300-kilowatt electromagnetic version that you are making available for sale. Is that correct?
Yes, we have two models, actually. We have the 100-kilowatt, which is the smallest motor that we make, because we don't make a smaller engine because the cost factors involved are just too expensive to make a smaller unit. It would come out at the same price as the 100-kilowatt motor. We also make a 300-kilowatt, a 600, a 1-megawatt, and a 4-megawatt unit.
And when you say we make, is that theoretically speaking, potentially speaking, or have you actually built models of each of these sizes?
We are currently building the 100-kilowatt and the 300-kilowatt. The 600, 1-megawatt, and 4-megawatt motors are built to order. We have a German government order currently for 2 4-megawatt units for a hospital in Munich.
And these are this German government order. Well, let's talk just for a second about what this motor entails before going into more details in terms of the numbers built and sold. If I understand right, this electromagnetic version is comparable to the magnetic version, which basically, once you bring the stators into position, the rotor starts turning and continues to turn and accelerate without load until you disengage the stators. And the input energy source is some kind of magnetic principle that is not understood by present physics. Physics would say it's impossible for magnets to provide a motive force just by themselves. There needs to be some other mechanism in place. And your electromagnetic version is the same as the magnet motor, all magnet, except that you've got an electrical stimulation turning on and off the at least a portion of the magnets involved in the setup. And once you get this thing going, it is self-running and putting out, so when you say 100 kilowatts, which is enough to run about 500 homes, a 100-kilowatt unit is putting out 100 kilowatts with no input fuel, no input electricity, no input hydro, no input wind. It's just magnets sitting there spinning and being charged through a self internal system. Is that, do I have that correct?
More or less, Sterling, it's a bit more complicated than that. We are using a combination of permanent magnets and coils, and the magnets, as they pass the coils, create an electrical charge, which is then switched externally to either attract or detract other magnets. I can't go into the absolute principles of the motor. I would love to, so that your listeners could understand more or less what we're doing. But in essence, that's basically how it works.
Okay. So in principle, you have a motor that could sit anywhere on the planet without fuel, and run 24/7. The input motive force, it has to do with the principles of magnetism that we don't understand today, but nevertheless works.
It's actually very, very simple if it's explained. You know, many people have been to visit me from all over the world, from China, Russia, Australia, all over the world have visited me, and I have explained the principles to them once they've signed a non-disclosure document. And incidentally, I would like to point out that in 2005, December, we built 6 of these electromagnetic engines, which we have on beta sites in Germany. There are 6 running, the 300 kilowatt units, and they've been running for the last 14 months now without any difficulty or any problem.
If I understand right, there is a little bit of a caveat to that, and that is that there has been some interference from men in black types, at least in 1 or 2 cases, where the individuals with units in their home have said, I don't care for people parking out in front and black vans and whatnot. Could you take this out of my house? Is there anything to that?
We've had a problem like that. Yes, we had a potential so-called investor, country of origin I won't disclose, but they came to visit me, promised me an investment of 100 million euro, wanted to see the plant, wanted to see the motor running. I showed them both. And 3 or 4 days later, they went to the home where the motor was running and attempted to remove it. Fortunately, the wife of the person was on the telephone to the police at the time and called the police, and it was only the advent of the police arriving that these people left.
So these 6 people who have these magnet motors or these electromagnetic motors running 14 months continuously powering their home, are these the, what size are these?
300 kilowatt.
That's a lot more power than what any home needs. What are you doing with the excess
power? They're selling the balance of the power back to the grid. We had a lot of difficulty convincing the power supply company in Germany as to what we were doing and how the motors were powered, because they wanted to know whether the units were certified by some organization in Germany. And we explained to them quite categorically that the alternators that we use are standard type off-the-shelf alternators, either from Siemens, Bosch, or Hitachi, and that these alternators were the only part that they should be concerned with because they are certified components. What drives the alternator could be 20 hamsters or a lot of people turning a crank at the end of it. It was irrelevant. The part that they were concerned about and should be only concerned about was the alternator which put power back into the grid.
So 300 kilowatts back into the grid, most homes are only wired for a low amperage. Wouldn't there need to be some rewiring of the grid?
Don't put 300 kilowatts back into the grid. Sterling, it depends entirely upon the lines coming to the area. And usually these things are quite near transformers. When you make an application to have power put back into the grid, of course you can't put back 300 kilowatts. Some of them are only putting back 2 and 4 kilowatts, some 6 kilowatts, depending on the lines going back to the supplier.
Okay, so 300 minus 2 or 4 leaves 200 and a lot electricity left over. What are you doing with that?
Well, that's just dormant. It's not being used. But the idea was to test the motors on a continuous basis to have a good foundation for the working ability of our engines. the average home, would, average medium-sized home would draw about 6 kilowatt, a larger home 10 kilowatt, depending upon whether you had electric heating, under electric underfloor heating, and so on. So the average small home, I would say anything between 4 and 6 kilowatt, and a medium-sized to large home between 10, maximum 12 kilowatt.
Are you able to govern this device so that even though it's rated for 300 kilowatts, it could run at a lower speed or lower power output? And what kind of stable range do you have?
Yes, obviously, the alternator has the capability of producing 300 kilowatt, but I mean, whether you were just drawing an electric razor off it or whether you were powering a big motor that was drawing, let's say, 100, 120 kilowatt, it would make no difference to the motor. The amount of energy that is generated is not stored in any manner in the motor. It runs in a dormant state, very similar to a car alternator. For example, when you crank an engine on the motor car, the alternator will charge that battery as fast as possible, but then afterwards would go into an idle state as the battery reaches its full charge. The same applies to the alternator. It doesn't store or build up a charge that is not dissipated. It just purely is in a dormant state.
These six homes that you've had this on, are these people willing to sign statements, or what's going to come of this in terms of some kind of a report or credibility for the magnet motor or the electromagnetic motor?
Well, yes, at the end of the period, these are the six beta motors that we put out. They unfortunately contain a sort of manual control box. We've upgraded the type of control box on the back of the engine, which is now electronic. And these motors will be pulled back and then revamped to the latest tech, which is the electronic control units. So sooner or later, I will pull the motors back, but at this point in time, I'm leaving them there, and I'm sure that at the end of the term, when the people relinquish the motors back to us, that they will sign the necessary documents to say what sort of performance or what sort of problems they had with the units. As of this time, we've had no problems with the exception of one bearing failure, but other than that, the motors have run perfectly.
Now, of these, you said you're presently building the 100 and 300 kilowatt size units.
Yes.
And when you say you're presently building, are you building one a month, 100 a month? How many are you producing?
No, we are producing. Unfortunately, we're only producing 20 to 30 motors a month. We've had a delay on some modifications because the posts that fit to the rotor of the that hold the magnet onto the rotor have been breaking the bolts because of the power of the magnets, and we've had to redesign a section of the motor, which has set us back a bit, but that is now complete, and the production is going forward. But at this time, we're only producing 20 to 30 a month, and we're sitting with some 65,000 orders.
65,000 orders.
Correct.
And on your website, you've got a place where people can sign up, give their information. Are you taking any money? At what point are you taking money? Is there a down?
Well, we don't sell the motors, Sterling. We lease them.
Mm-hmm.
Motors are leased. The person pays an advance lease if they want to order the motor. They pay, let's say, for example, they order the motor. They make a payment of 50%. That 50% is held. When the motor is delivered to them, they pay the balance of the money, which gives them a forward payment of 5 years on the lease of the motor. Thereafter, the payment is a small amount just to keep the lease active. They have at the end of the five-year term, they can make a decision whether they want to keep the motor going or the lease going, or they can return the motor. It's up to them. But we never sell the product.
If I leased one of these units, what would my power bill be with your unit versus what I'm paying the local utility?
Well, if you take the cost of the motor, depending on what unit you want, if you took, for example, the 100-kilowatt motor, which is 19,000, you could divide 19,000 into 60 months would give you a rate. I don't know what that rate is offhand. I'm actually lying in bed at the moment. You know, it is 12:15 here in the morning in Germany, so I don't have a calculator with me, so excuse me. But if you do a rough calculation, you could calculate 19,000 into 60 would give you probably about 93 euros a month. Is that correct?
Yeah, let me pull on my calculator here really quick. 19,000
divided by 60.
Divided by 60 is 316 euros per month.
316 euros per month.
Yeah.
Okay. If you calculate, for example, on a 100 kilowatt motor, you would be drawing fuel wise something in the order of between 50 and 60 liters of fuel, which is divided by 4.5 US gallons per hour, at a cost of I don't know what the diesel cost is. It's 1.08 euros per liter. And if you calculate that out, 50 liters an hour, 24 hours a day, is very, very expensive. So when you consider that our engines, yes, if you calculate it that way, at 312, whatever it is you get per month, there's no pollution, which is the first thing. This is what we're trying to achieve, is zero carbon emissions into the atmosphere. And a diesel engine would put 50 liters of carbon back into the atmosphere. So at the end of 5 years, he's paying a nominal fee. Let's say the fee works out at 100 euros a month, which includes maintenance. Now, I must add that we give a five-year conditional guarantee on the motor, so that whatever he's paying includes any maintenance that may occur with the motor in the first 5 years.
So you're talking that the 316 euros per month, this is for a 300 or 100 kilowatt unit?
Well, it's not, what the 19,000 is for the 100 kilowatt motor.
Okay. And you're saying for a comparable unit that was, say, diesel-powered, for 100 kilowatt output would consume about 50 liters per hour,
correct,
which would cost $37,000 per month. So you're two orders of magnitude cheaper than what people can get presently.
Also, the cost of the diesel unit initially for 100 kilowatt would be in the order of $65,000.
I did 50 times 24 times 31, and that came to $37,000.
Okay, but that's the diesel cost. But the cost of the actual generator to purchase it would be around $65,000.
Okay, right. $65,000 for the device, and then you have to...
you have to feed it.
Plus you have to... The fuel. So just the fuel, you're three orders of mag... or two orders of magnitude or 100 times cheaper just on the fuel savings. And then on top of that, your device is, let's see, 65 divided by 19. Your device is 3.5 times cheaper than what people can get a comparable unit. So the device initially is almost four times, or it's three times cheaper than what's on the market, and there's no fuel cost.
That's right. Well, the most important thing that one should remember is not don't only look at the cost of fuel. What we've got to consider is how much CO2 has been put into the atmosphere. As you know, looking at the news, I mean, in Germany we've had the warmest winter, I think, on record, and you guys at the moment are freezing.
Yeah, I saw something in the news yesterday that January was
the hottest
month on record in the history of the recorded history of the planet.
Correct. Well, we haven't had a winter here. I mean, you know, the temperatures run between 6 degrees and 11 degrees in the day. I mean, it's crazy. It's unheard of. So I don't know what the summer's going to be like. But the thing is this, that our main concern and our main consideration is why we've been working very hard on getting these motors out into the field, is that we have to do something about changing the planet. And we have to do it now. We cannot sit around and wait forever until somebody comes up with a solution.
How many people have witnessed your motor in operation?
Sitting quite a few. I'm sure there must be more than 120 people.
Okay. And do you make everyone sign an NDA who sees it?
Yes, correct. Everybody signs a non-disclosure agreement.
Mm-hmm. And you said that you're producing presently 20 to 30 a month. How many total have you produced?
We've probably produced at this point in time, we've been in production for a year. We got into serious production probably July. July, so I say we would have been on what we call full production probably around July, so probably about 80, 90 motors at this point in time.
Okay. And when you install these, what do you do to protect it from people taking a look?
Okay. Very simple. The machine is fitted with a GPS module and a GSM module. Any attempt to move the machine or to open the machine or to tamper with the machine in any way will trigger on our software, on our computers, which will then immediately give the location of the machine. We employed the services of a company called Securico, which is all worldwide. They're a security company, and they will immediately remove the machine from the premises where it has been tampered. Whether the guy has a five-year lease, whether he's had it for 1 week, 1 day, 1 year, the machine will be removed and the lease will be canceled.
What if the tampering is done by the next-door neighbor?
It would do the same thing. It would trigger an alarm immediately.
But you wouldn't remove it if there was a neighbor who was tampering.
Well, he would have to give me a very good reason why he's tampering with it, because we have a very, very strict policy. And our lease agreement also says that any tampering of the machine will result in its removal and cancellation of the lease immediately. We have a problem with patents, Sterling, and I must point this out to your listeners on the net, that patents today are basically a license for somebody else to copy what you've tried to achieve all your life. So we're looking at a different perspective in regard to protecting intellectual property. I think that if somebody has spent years and years of research and a lot of hard work, blood, sweat, and tears, never mind the amount of money that is spent, and then somebody comes along and then starts reproducing your product, you become very bitter about it. So we've gone to great lengths to devise this black box, and also our contracts and documentation is very strict in regard to this sort of thing.
Now, when you say you've had 6,500 orders and you're producing 20 to 30 a month, obviously you have plans to ramp up your production. Are you still kind of waiting to see how these things perform in the field before going to the next level of production?
No. We are in negotiation with a number of countries around the world. Hawaii, for example, has signed a license agreement, so they're coming on board. We're going to get them into production very soon. Countries like the Benelux countries, which is Denmark, that area, Czechoslovakia, Russia, you'll see on our website, the Russian website is up in St. Petersburg. They will go into production. And what I'm trying to do is get everybody into production around June or July. Once this happens, we can obviously fulfill all of our outstanding orders, and the people that have been very patiently waiting for engines will receive the engines in short order. I estimate or plan around June or July, but you know the best laid plans are meant to go straight. But this is what I plan to do.
Now, when you're talking about obviously once people really realize that this technology is real, the number of orders will go up exponentially. So is that one of the reasons maybe you're not begging for validation or credibility because you already are overwhelmed with orders and are trying to keep up with those?
Correct. My policy is very simple. The more people that don't believe it works, the better it suits me right at this point in time.
Okay. It's an interesting way to put it.
I cannot produce vast quantities of engines. And, you know, like any business, if you have a market product on the market and you cannot supply, it is as detrimental as if you put out a bad product on the market. And this is another stipulation. Some of the people have had to wait for engines purely because I'm a bit of a fanatic and I do not want the product to go out onto the market that is not suitable. For example, if I sent out a motor because I'm greedy for money and the motor didn't perform to the required specification, the name of Perendev falls down flat because then the company develops a bad reputation. So rather, I irritate the people by them waiting for an engine, and when they do get the motor, they get a product that will last at least 5 years, hopefully 25 years.
Now, as a residential consumer, and kind of my particular interest is in seeing each home have its own power device so that you could basically be independent, though not necessarily separated from the grid, just so that you're able to be separated if necessary. 300 kilowatts is tons more than what a home would need. A home with battery system could run on 2 or 3 kilowatts. Your system is overkill for that. Do you have any plans to sell a smaller unit? I mean, the price point you're talking about is way cheaper than existing technology, and no fuel cost. And you said that originally you said that the 100, 300 kilowatt size is where you get to economies, you know, where it's economical. I would think you could go some smaller. When do you anticipate maybe going to a home-tailored size or an automobile or a plane? Would these devices power a jet or a ship or a locomotive or a home?
Absolutely. We've in Holland, they have a lot of river boats that run up and down the river continually. And we are fitting one of these boats with a 300-kilowatt unit, which is basically a generator but powering an electric drive motor. This will be done very soon, and I'm sure that it will be a very, very large market, especially in the boating area. We've also developed the AutoPack. I don't know if you've been on the website recently. We've designed a new AutoPack, which is being prototyped at the moment, and your motor company, Daimler Chrysler, is very interested in our product.
Mm-hmm. The water pack, what's that?
No, AutoPack, AutoPack.
Auto?
Automobile.
Okay, AutoPack.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's on the website. It's on the front page of the website. I've not given a lot of information on that because we are not looking to sell to the private do-it-yourself guy, because first of all, it's a bit complicated. It requires a lot of knowledge as far as electrical control units go, because the motor basically is a 100 kilowatt generator. The advantage is, if you do have it in your motor car, not only can you drive to the office and plug the office into your car when you get there, but also when you drive home, you can plug your house into the car when you get home, because it is a 100 kilowatt generator after all.
Let's talk about the sizes of the 100 and 300 kilowatt units.
Are you talking about motor sizes, or are you talking about the case size?
The size of the motor and the case and the weight of both.
Okay. The size of the case of the 100 kilowatt is about 1.2 in length versus 1.6 for the 300 kilowatt motor. The height is the same, 1.4 on both motors, and the width is the same on both motors, 1.2. It was designed at 1.2 meters because it could fit through a doorway quite easy, because most doors are 1.3 wide, 1.4 wide.
How big would a comparable diesel-powered generator, a motor and generator system, be to what you have?
Okay, 300 kilowatt diesel motor would be a 360 horsepower unit. It's quite a big, it's usually a six-cylinder unit, and it's quite heavy, quite large. It's a big unit. Our motor is circular. It's 400 or 40 centimeters in diameter, and it's 720 millimeters long.
Say that again, 40 centimeters in diameter?
Correct, and 720 in length.
That's the 100 kilowatt?
The 100 or the 300. They're both the same size. They look identical, but they are two different units. What's internals, the internals are different, but the outside casings are exactly the same.
Uh-huh.
The alternators on 100 and 300 kilowatt are smaller. That's why the cases are smaller.
You started out with a magnet motor, and you were talking 30 kilowatts with one of those.
20 kilowatts.
20 kilowatts?
Yes, yes. The largest was 20 kilowatts. The one that I have in my house is 20 kilowatts.
Is it still running?
We've done a lot of changes to it. It's actually going to the Deutsche Museum. I've done some modifications to it, and I'm going to donate it to the Deutsche Museum.
The Deutsche Museum?
Yeah, the German Museum in Munich. It's a very, very famous museum.
Mm-hmm.
And then people can pay the museum to go and see it.
Is it going to be sitting there on display running so people can...
Running, yes, a running display, active display.
I would think that you'd want to wait until you're ready to handle the number of orders you get before you do that.
Well, no, the motor has been built for some time, and it's a very sad story relating to that motor because my partners that I had in Germany took me for a ride, a lot of money, and they tried to steal the technology. It's very sad that we have to deal with people like that, but that is the fact, and that motor is a very sore point with me, so I have two of them. One I will keep, which will be on display in our own offices, and the other one will go to the Deutsche Museum.
Mm-hmm. And
I will be putting an article, incidentally, on the Internet. Because the engine is patented, we will put an article on the Internet that anybody that's wanting to replicate our technology, because I see a lot of magnetic motors are coming on the Internet and people don't really understand what they need to do. I will show them what they need to do as far as shielding the magnets, because the secret is you do not want magnet A to see magnet B. And this is the secret of the whole unit, and I will be doing I think on our new internet webpage, which we'll be launching very soon, we will have an area for people to have a look at what we're doing, how we shield the magnets and what we do, so that they can start building their own machines on the older type. But the newer type, we're going to protect the technology very generously.
So when you say patents, you're talking about the magnet motor?
Yes, a patent, for example, the magnet motor is on the Internet. All the plans are basically on the Internet. Everybody can see what we've done. There are parts of the patent which is not explained on the Internet, which is a good thing as far as the shielding goes and how the shielding is made up. It's very specific. It's not just a question of using any sort of metal. This is a tried and tested method of shielding the magnets, and we will make that available for people very soon. I think the webpage should be complete by maybe the middle of next week, next month, middle of next week and the beginning of the month. And I've seen the preview of the webpage that has been done, and it is very nice. It's been done by a professional, and we will have a page on there which will discuss our technologies. We're doing a lot more than just magnet motors, which we do not advertise on the Internet. But anybody interested can contact me and write to me, and I will then tell them what we're doing. I don't want to advertise it because it's dangerous, and I don't want strange people. We've had a lot of strange people here. I think from every single secret agency in the world has been to see me.
Mm-hmm. Actually knocking on the door or looking in the windows?
No, coming to see me, actually sitting down and talking. They come as businessmen and so on, but we know who they are.
Mm-hmm. So when you ramped from the magnet motor to the electromagnetic version, were you basically using the same principle, just accentuating it via electromagnetic shutoff capability?
It is more or less the same principle, but with a lot of enhancements which create a lot more power between the coils and the magnets.
Now,
I'd like to discuss it with you in more detail, but you know, at this point in time it's not protected.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know how to explain this to you. I'd rather not try and explain it, but it's a combination of magnets and coils.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you sell one of these things, versus, I asked you earlier how many people had seen this thing in operation. You said 120 or so, approximately. Are you including people who have purchased the unit and it's sitting there in the home but haven't looked inside, or are you talking about people who've actually looked into the guts of this thing?
Okay, what I do is, when a week before the motor is due for delivery, we invite the person to come and see the motor being tested. This allows them to see the unit being tested on a torque bench to see that it derives its correct horsepower or kilowatts, and also when they couple the alternator to the motor, because if the motor is coupled to a gearbox to the alternator, a 2-to-1 ratio gearbox, then they can see the output from the alternator as well. They then sign that they're satisfied with the results, and then the motor is sealed and delivered. So they actually see the insides before they take delivery, so they don't need to open it. They know what is inside.
So are they required to sign an NDA for that process?
Yes, they sign an NDA, and they sign the lease agreement, which prohibits them from tampering with the motor.
So everyone who purchases one of these things is going to sign an NDA and a lease agreement that says they will not tamper?
Correct. Until we find a concrete solution to protecting this technology, this is the only way that we can do it at this time.
Mm-hmm. Now, of the units you've built and delivered, let's ask the question first. You were saying that you've built maybe 80 to 90 motors so far.
Correct.
How many of those are installed and running right now?
Well, probably around 60, 64 units, I would think. There's still some that have got to go out, which are still on, which are almost complete. So, yes, I suppose about 60, 64 units.
Okay. You said on the size of these things, we didn't get to the weight. You said 1.8.
Okay, the 300 kilowatt is 350 kilogram, and the 100 kilowatt is 250 kilogram.
Okay, and is the added weight due to the generator size?
The size of the alternator, correct.
The alternator?
Yep.
The motor itself, even though they're about the same size, do they weigh much different?
They're a little bit different because the 300 has a lot more in it than the 100 kilowatt. For example, we're running double magnets, two 150 millimeter magnets on the same line. And the 100 kilowatt is running only one set of magnets, so you can reduce the weight by the number of magnets that are less in the 100 kilowatt motor.
Mm-hmm. How fast are these things spinning?
Okay, maximum speed 3,000 RPM. It self-energizes at 200 RPM. So to start it, it would like be starting an automobile. You put the key in, you turn the key, the lights come on, you crank it, and it goes past 200. As soon as it goes past 200 RPM, it self-energizes, goes up to 3,000 where it stays.
Okay. And we were asking earlier about governing so that you have a range of functional output. A 300 unit could go from what functional output to what functional output? 300 is the highest. What would be the lowest functional output once you get past the 200 RPM?
Okay, the alternator will not energize because the alternator is designed to run at 1500 RPM, and when it gets to 1500 RPM, it's at its correct voltages. For example, for European standards, it'll be 240 volts per phase. The three phase will be at 400 volts. For America, your three-phase will be 240 volts. I think you want that. We've had some orders for 400-volt motors. And you could draw the amount from of electric razor or to the maximum. We don't recommend on the 300 kilowatt using constantly, continuously 290 is a continuous rating, but not 300, because 300, the alternator gets warm and will go up at quite a high temperature, 35 degrees C.
Mm-hmm. So the 290 is the high optimum.
Is the continuous rating, correct.
What would be the low rating of a, in other words, what would be a reasonable low power output?
15 watt.
15 watts?
Correct. It won't affect. You see, the alternator is energized and is producing current, but that current is being used. So the entire circuit, although the motor is running, it's not producing any energy. It's only when you plug something into it that it will start to supply energy. For example, if you use a 15 watt or 5 watt AC lamp, it would work, no problem. It wouldn't peak or go bright or anything like that. The whole thing is regulated so that it doesn't produce any extra energy in its running state. Even if there's no power on it, it would not create energy. Although the gauges show you that it's producing 240 volts per phase or 400 volts per phase, it's dormant. It's until you plug something in and switch it on.
Now, most situations I know of, if you don't put a load on them, they tend to speed to destruction.
No. No, the motor is governed by electronic speed control. So when there's no load, the motor, although it's running at 3,000 RPM and the alternator is running at 1,500, it won't over rev or over excite. What happens is if, for example, you take, let's say 200, for example, hypothetically, a 200 kilowatt motor, and you turned it on and off and on and off, so that you create an immense load, then off. The motor shunts. In other words, it's trying to get back to its right speed, because as you draw on the alternator is almost like driving your vehicle with a handbrake on. So it's extra load. As soon as you take the handbrake off, the car will go forward again. It will surge. Now, this is what the motor will do. It will start to hunt, because now the RPMs are changing. Because as the RPMs or the load increases on the alternator, the motor has to compensate to overcome the load. But if the load goes on and off, it starts to hunt. Are you with me?
Yeah.
Now, with the beta units that we have running, they are mechanical. They're using carbon brushes on a commutator. So their hunting rate is very large. But on the electronic units that we develop now, it's very accurate. So as soon as the motor changes RPMs, the control unit compensates immediately. So the hunting we've virtually eliminated. Because there are some applications where a motor would be switching on and off, on and off, on and off all the time. And this is your peak-to-peak, because it will peak-to-peak at 360 kilowatts, which is what normally happens in these alternators, but it's not recommended because eventually you will destroy the alternator. It may be 3 years or 4 years, but you will destroy the alternator.
In most systems, a home system, for example, you have... So on these beta units, you're basically always running them on a low power status, somewhere at least 10 to 15 times lower than what it's rated for. Or you're saying it's a 100 kilowatt unit and it's running at home, so it's about tenfold of a what the home requires versus what the power the unit's capable of.
One of the 300 kilowatt units is installed on a farm near Munich, and this man is a woodworker. He cuts very large pieces of timber with the machinery, and besides running his home, he's also running his workshop and his all bits and pieces. So his demand, his highest demand at any given stage would be around 250 kilowatt. So the motor has handled that amicably. There's been no hassles whatsoever. He's found no drop in power. He's had no problems with power. He's dead happy.
And you were saying that the 6 beta units have carbon brushes on them.
Correct.
Did you say there's some kind of a manual governing or?
Yeah, well, it's what I call a manual manual control unit or a mechanical control unit as opposed to electronic control unit, because it's old technology. It's brushes running on commutators. There's wear. There's arcing between the commutator and things like that. You know, little irritating things which will not give it a very long life. It may run a year, it may run 2 years, and then you're going to have to change the carbon brushes and clean the commutator. But on the electronic units, there's none of that, because there is no carbon buildup, there is no arcing in the brushes, using solid-state electronics, and it works perfectly.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about this mechanical control, I'm picturing somebody there manually turning the knob up and down to handle the load that it's required. That's not what's going on?
No. It works very similar to, you guys know Briggs & Stratton engine. When a Briggs & Stratton engine comes on under load, the throttle will open to allow more fuel into the engine to compensate for the load. The same thing happens on the mechanical system, where as the load comes on, it advances or retards the control unit to compensate for the load.
What would you say is the biggest logjam right now in your operation that you're targeting to try and help move things forward?
Manufacture,
yeah.
Without a doubt.
And so the different licensing groups that you're bringing on board, you're trying to address that by getting more people, more manufacturers licensed?
Absolutely. We need to get as many people up and running as quick as possible. Spain should go online by June, July. Austria should be on at the same time. Czechoslovakia, Hungary, Russia, and the Benelux countries, which is Denmark, Netherlands. So, and we had a meeting with people from France. They also want to manufacture. So it looks like most of the European countries will be manufacturing. And in the short term, we'll be supplying to other countries, for example, New Zealand, Australia, India. South Korea is also coming online in June, July. So, yes, we hope that everything will be perfect by then, but I will be spending a lot of time running around the world training all of these people on the technology.
Now, on the license fee, when we were talking earlier, you and I, on a business level, the fee was quite high. What kind of return on investment are you looking at for somebody who wants to get into manufacturing these things?
Okay, well, that is all proprietary information, but I can give you an idea. If a person were to produce 1,000 units a month, that would be 500 100 kilowatt motors and 500 300 kilowatt motors. The profit on that would be 4.4 million euro a month.
Okay, and are you doing your licenses per capita or per unit?
On a GDP basis, gross domestic profit. For example, the license fee for Germany, for example, would be 39.9 million. The way it works is that they pay a retainer fee of 10,000 euros, which is to hold the area for them for a period of 6 months. After 6 months, if they require an extension, we will give them an extension that they have to apply in writing, but we should be able to finalize the license agreement within 6 months. They then pay 10% of the total license fee. The balance of the license fee is payable over 5 years. At the time that they sign the license, they get all of our technology plus a year's support from me with training. I assist them with setting up engineering, whatever they require. I recommend that they get existing engineering companies to manufacture parts as opposed to one engineering company manufacturing all the parts. So they manufacture parts through six or seven different engineering companies, bring back to a central point, assemble, do the testing and supply. And I will then train them, their technicians or supervisors, on what needs to be done as far as the assembly of the units go.
Okay. And when you're not in the U.S. market, are you waiting for me to get back on deck?
Well, I don't know. That's up to you. As I say, Hawaii, we've signed up Hawaii. Hawaii is gone. That's already a signed contract. We have a lot of interest from South America, of course. But you must remember that these motors are ideal for emergency situations, which it seems to be besetting America at this point in time. You know, for example, down Louisiana area, they would love my generators, because I know that there was a lot of generators supplied down there when they had the disaster with Katrina, but nobody thought of supplying the generators with diesel. It was quite quite a faux pas, I think, from somebody's point of view. Mm-hmm. Because the diesel they had down there was contaminated with water, so they couldn't use the generators.
What is your what's the low hanging fruit on this system?
Low hanging fruit.
I mean, the target market for customers.
Everybody. Anybody and everything that requires an existing diesel or petrol engine. Doesn't matter what application it is, whether it's for aircraft. We have a 100 kilowatt aircraft motor which we've developed. It weighs 58 kilograms. We have the water pack for automobiles. We have the unit for marines, from the smallest of pleasure craft to 4 megawatt units for ocean liners. So, yes, our motors can fit any application, but I must warn you that to build a 4-megawatt unit, you must remember that the thing is 16 meters long by 6 meters high by 6 meters wide. So it's not the kind of unit you could put on the back of your pickup. And it weighs something like 300 tons, so it's quite a bulky bit of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And these units we do not supply completely assembled. We will manufacture the parts, we will put the thing together, we will test it, we will then strip it down, it's then transported to its site where it will be erected.
Mm-hmm.
The cost of that unit, the 4-megawatt unit, is 5.6 million euro.
And are you approaching power plants?
Yes. That's a good one. Sterling is... they're a bit concerned about me at the moment. They're very worried about what I'm doing, actually. So it's going to be interesting, let's put it that way, because I think in the future, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, they're not very happy.
Now, what about markets and exclusive regions? I mean, you've got Detroit interested for automobile applications, yeah. And they have an international market. And if you've got a distributor in is there going to be conflicts between regions if you have an exclusive territory?
Okay, each person that acquires a territory, let's use, for example, let's say Texas. If a person obtains a license for Texas from us, then they can only operate within that region. If somebody in Arizona, which is, I think, borders on Texas, then sells products to in Texas, where he should be selling in Arizona, would be a conflict, and then would be, you know, some disciplinary action would have to be taken. Alternatively, if the guy in Arizona had a buyer in Texas, the right way to do it would be to contact the Texas dealer, and the Texas dealer would then give him a commission on the sale. That would be the way to do it. This cross-border trading is something that we've also in our contract we don't like, because we don't want, for example, Hungary to supply to Czechoslovakia and Czechoslovakia to supply to Russia and so on. So they're all very aware that they have to retain their own territories.
Well, Mike, we're at the end of our hour. I appreciate you coming on. It's been fascinating. It's been Mike Brady with Parandev Power. Your website is parandev-power.com.
Correct.
And our coverage is parandev.com. guess one of these days I'll have to relinquish that domain name to you, huh?
Well, we should talk about that. But it's been very nice talking to you, Sterling, and I'm certainly happy to talk to you, and I hope that your American listeners have gained some insight. But just remember that in the long term, there will be information on our website. They must be patient. It will happen. We will discuss our technologies, and we will try and assist people who want to build magnetic engines the right way to do it and what to do with the shielding.
Well, that sounds fascinating. I'm really glad we had this interview. I can't think of anything that's more exciting in the energy field than what you've just described. That's just fantastic. So congratulations, Mike.
Thank you, Sterling.
Take care.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.